There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the First Exchange podcast with me, your host, Lydia Daydal. Well, I had a fantastic guest for you this week. I'm delighted that he came in. He is very important to me because he is the very first person who taught me jiu-jitsu. My very first class of jiu-jitsu, he was the coach. So it was really great to get him in. It was, of course, Chris Leddy, jiu-jitsu black belt from East Coast Jiu-Jitsu Academy Bray. He came in to talk about his journey in jiu-jitsu that moved on to a very serious back injury and how he found relief or recovery, shall we say, or is still in the process of recovery through breathing and what kind of journey that has led him on to since then. Fantastic episode. Could listen to him all day. And I think, you know, if you have ever experienced pain, physical or emotional, you've loved jiu-jitsu, of martial arts, this is the episode for you. So without further ado, thank you all so much for all your love every week. DMs, tweets, emails. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the podcast. Go and enjoy episode 64 of the First Exchange podcast with Chris Leddy, a.k.a. Breathing Debbie. Chris Leddy, welcome.
Lydia, thank you.
I'm so happy you came in.
Yeah, well, it's been nice to get... This is the first time... I was actually thinking of walking down the road.
Yeah.
That the last time I would have walked down that road was when I was probably 20 and it was a lot darker. And I had like 6 cans just after getting off the bus. Honestly, that's what
really?
I was thinking. Seeing that spar on the corner.
Yeah.
Because like, I lived in Bray for my whole... Which is in Wicklow.
Yeah.
And we would have went out for nights out to Dublin. Back when I used to drink and stuff. But other than that, I had no reason.
Yeah, I was
just training in Zara's for the last 10 years before that. So.
Yeah, East Coast Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually, I never, because I'm obviously from Waterford, so I've lived here for like, 16 years. But I never, because when you're from Waterford, a small town, like, you can just go out. You know what I mean? You could walk to town. So it's weird thinking about, like, if you're, like, from Bray, I still kind of, I know it's Wicklow, but I consider that Dublin, even though it's absolutely not. But
there's an ongoing debate there. It depends who you're telling. If I'm telling someone that's not from Ireland, where are you from? I say Dublin.
Yeah.
And then if I'm telling someone that is from Ireland, where are you from? I just say Bray. And then if they don't know where that is. Sunny seaside, hey.
Sunny seaside.
Sure,
and would you like, got the bus in and then all got a taxi home?
Oh, yeah.
Expensive, a taxi home from town.
One of the few regrets that I have in life is a couple of times we would have not paid for the taxi home. And that's,
I'd done a jump.
Yeah. And now this is a long time ago. And that's like, I don't really have many things crime wise. I don't really have many things that I think back on and I go,
Yeah.
But there was once or twice where drink induced and it was just for, it was almost, and the thing that made me think of it now is like, Jesus, that's someone's like 50 quid for their bills and stuff.
Yeah.
Now that I have bills,
yeah.
Getting very deep straight away here. But that's it's very expensive, long story short.
Yeah.
We used to have the cans on the bus. I haven't drank in the last 20 years.
Well,
I
was about to say, I'm getting
excited.
How long am I doing jiu-jitsu now? Like 6-7 years. And I always knew you as someone who didn't drink.
Yeah,
you know, from
I had a few back in them days, a birthday or something like that. Now, especially
but it'd be a beer.
The
or
only
something.
Reason I didn't was because I was always training, and I had training the next day, and I never liked not being able to drive home from somewhere. I hate waiting for the bus. I'm quite impatient with many things, and I public transport my whole life, so it's not like I'm going public transport, but I just hate public transport.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got a car, I was like, "Well, now, I can't drink now."
Because, yeah, of course,
you know. But yeah, I stopped drinking in 2011. I got battered. I got beaten up. Yeah, really badly.
I didn't know that.
Bray, yeah. Which is very surprising of Bray now, because Bray typically wouldn't have that reputation. But it was kind of my own fault. There was a group of lads, I'll skim the story. It was a group of lads really young. It was near Christmas. Me and my friends were walking from my house to the seafront, from my mam's house to the seafront in Bray. Right. Walked past this big gang of lads and girls, like lots and lots and lots of them drinking cans and wine in this kind of alley that we had to walk through. And one of them or two of them said something and we were kind of ha 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 and we went. And then someone threw a bottle as we walked past. There was only three of us, me and my mates. And then there was this big gang of lads and ladies, and they threw the bottle, and we should have just kept walking. The bottle missed, and I had had a few beers, and I was like, oh, da, da, da. And I was doing jiu-jitsu for like 2 years at the time, 3 years, which is the most probably, but which no, I was blue t-shirt, but that's for another story. I probably that's the most dangerous amount of self-defense or martial arts to know, is like a year or 2 years worth, because you think you're deadly, and you think you can handle anything. And truth to be told, I probably, actually, looking back now, I probably could have handled it, but I just didn't expect it all. Like, if I was as rough as those lads were, it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But I was a little bit innocent that they were actually, I was like, I'm used to being able to beat everyone up in the gym. Yeah. And I was like, these lads aren't going to fucking try to beat me up, you know? And then you start, all of a sudden, you're taking a few punches and digs. Mm-hmm. And basically, I got like a fracture in my eye socket, and I had like a little problem in my eye that I still kind of have. It's not serious, but it doesn't dilate properly. So if it's real sunny, I'm like a vampire or something. I can't really see. I had to go to like Loughlinstown A&E.
Wow.
And I had concussion and all this stuff. And I had no phone battery. This is in 2010, right? So like no iPhone type of thing. It was just little crap, like little Nokia thing. So you couldn't, no battery, no nothing. I was sitting there. Nobody knew that I was there. And not that mattered, like it's not like it was dangerous or that I was going to pass away or something, but nobody knew that I was there. And I was just sitting there fuming at myself, going, this whole thing could have been avoided if I didn't. And then from that, it wasn't just because of that. This was all kind of coincidental. But right after that is when I started doing jiu-jitsu full time, which had kind of already been decided before that. So it's not like some movie situation where I was like, right. Now I'm gonna, that's never revenge. Gonna happen to me again. Yeah, exactly.
I must avenge them.
No, but yeah, that's the last schmozzle that I got myself caught up in as well, outside on the streets, thankfully.
It's interesting because a lot of people would start jiu-jitsu or martial arts after something like that had happened, like as in they were aware, okay, I wasn't able to protect myself, maybe I should like start training and have some sort of... but that's really interesting, the way instantly you had that reflection of like, that was my fault. Why did I do that?
Well, it wasn't, it was their fault. It was everyone's fault. It was everyone's fault. And when it was drink's fault, these guys and girls, if they had seen me, not that I'm Brock Lesnar walking around, but this was a time where I was lifting a lot of weights. I was probably rubbish because of it, but I was lifting a lot of weights and I was big and strong. And I'm in an environment where, usually in the training environment, people would know, Jesus, at the time, maybe it didn't hold up for very long, they go, oh, Chris is all right, you know, Chris is tough, spar or something. And I was like, I just wouldn't have been used to people trying to have a go at me, you know. But speaking of the self-defense, one thing that I do say is that you have to have had that to be able to expect success in that situation again. I would say it is so, so rare that anyone's first real self, that wasn't my first now, I had in school, you're getting a few scraps as well, but I would say it's so rare, let's say someone decides to go to a self-defense class because they're scared of walking home or something like that, and then touch wood, it never happens, but unluckily they get into a situation where they need it, somebody attacks them, how are the chances that for your first ever time, whatever on your first time of doing it, goes well?
Yeah.
Do you know? My girlfriend's training to be a secondary school teacher and she did her placement, and only now 4 weeks into her finishing her first one with the school was she like, well, now I feel comfortable with the students and stuff. And I was relating it back because we had that self-defense conversation, me and her, and I said it's the exact same thing. In a self-defense situation or whatever it is, you have to feel comfortable or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you have to be comfortable, doesn't mean you have to be chilled out, but you have to know what's going to happen. And my example was, I was chilled out, but I didn't know that these lads were going to start punching me and kicking me in the face. Whereas if that happened on the way home now, which I don't think it will, hopefully, and this kind of might sound a bit more badass than I actually am, but I now wouldn't wait for... to be punched. I'd either leave straight away if it was possible, which I should have done the first time, or as soon as it becomes possible not to leave, I should go, well, hang on a minute, I'm actually training to do this and these guys are just some scrotes, like, do you know what I mean?
So, absolutely. Absolutely.
But that was why I stopped drinking, kind of. And because absolutely feels so gross the next day, don't you? What?
Yes, so sick.
Like, so sick. It,
and it's actually interesting that you bring that up because when I started jiu-jitsu, like, I went from, like, the most, like, the pinnacle of unhealth in all capacities, you know, to starting jiu-jitsu and totally having this, like, you know, just, like, as if my I got a new being. I was, it would be the only way that I could describe it. And to quit alcohol and quit prescription drugs and like a really bad lifestyle, unhealthy eating, and to then go to like training 5-6 days a week and social aspects be like having a coffee after training or grabbing a bit of food after training and not drinking and being up 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning to go training and doing a bit of yoga on a Sunday and repeating it for months on end. Like, it was, for the first 2 years, I was like, I can't believe that this exists and not the whole world doesn't know about it and they don't do it. So I quit drinking for like 3 years. And then slowly I started, you know, having a glass of wine with dinner and different things.
Yeah.
I've never gone back to where I've been, thankfully. And then during lockdown, I was like just at home. And I was like that thing of like, oh, I'll have a glass of wine with my dinner. And then it'd be the end of the week. And I'm like, I'm drinking 2 bottles of wine this week. Not cool.
Yeah.
So I quit again after Christmas and I haven't drank. And now I'm like, I'll never drink again. You know, I probably will have a glass of something sometime. But it's that knowing that you're able to live life without actually having to have a pint or have a drink or have a glass of wine. Yeah. You know, it's
now at the same time,
liberating.
I lost a lot of connections and lots of friends who, for no other reason, and it sounds too dramatic to say because we stopped drinking, we stopped seeing each other, because that's not, well, I suppose literally that's why, but it's just time and you know, you get into other things and lots of regrets that were probably unavoidable, but like there's people that I miss in my life that now I only see here and there, and and then they're getting married, and which, you know, hopefully after all this week everyone can still be a part of, and it's not like we've completely lost touch, but it's like, Jesus, I did such a, to have stopped drinking and to do something like that, the jiu-jitsu for like 10 years is now, by the way, when I'm saying I'm stopping drinking, it makes me sound like I'm some sort of saint, you know, which is, I'm laughing too, because you're saying, and loads of people have this experience, is like, they're like, wow, I come down to jiu-jitsu and I feel, and like afterwards, like I'm going home and I'm like ordering a burger and chips and I'm sitting there, do you know what I mean? And there's other things there's other things that you can do except drinking to pass your time, of course. So there's, the only reason that I stopped drinking isn't because I'm some sort of like teetotaler or I'm some sort of health freak. It's just the practicalities of the situation. Yeah. And for me, I'm someone who does everything and to badness in some ways to excess. If I like something, I do it. I just do it loads. And I eat real fast when I'm eating and I drink real fast when I'm drinking. And even though it's been 15 years, or not 15, I'm 32 now, but it's been however long since I was hardcore going out, 8 cans out to town, nagging on the bus, pints, shots, however long ago since that. If I went out now and everything was open, I would just find myself doing that straight away.
Yes.
And then I would be, and I've had that experience a couple of times, like since jiu-jitsu, where I've gone back out to do something like that and I've actually written myself off. But yeah, I was laughing. I was grinning when you were saying about that real health kick that you got from jiu-jitsu, because people would meet someone like me in the gym and they're like, wow, this guy is such a, you know, temple of health and stuff. And then they see me at home and I'm playing PlayStation in my pants, you know. But yeah.
But it is mad for those people who start jiu-jitsu and stick at it and take it seriously to a degree, how it actually does change them.
Of course.
In one of the, you know, maybe 1% would it be that have black belts in Ireland? Like, there's definitely, we're definitely under 50, right?
I don't know. I never counted. I had some weird, like, there would have been a time where, based on the progression that I thought I was making in my jiu-jitsu and based on how I was doing in competitions in Ireland and stuff, I was like, wow, I have. And this was only because this is like a headline that you would see on jiu-jitsu websites about first 10 black belts in England. First 10.
Yes.
I was like, wow, maybe I'm going to be in like the first insert relevant number here. Yeah. But I don't know. Now, when I actually got it, I never bothered looking. It's number 15. No, I don't know. But I don't know. And I'll tell you what's weird about that as well, which is something I'm sure that we'll talk about, is that I hurt my back quite seriously.
Of course.
Not because of jiu-jitsu directly necessarily, and not even in jiu-jitsu, but I hurt my back in 2019. I've always had a bit of a crap back that I had a potion of things for it and a toolbox to keep me coming back to exercise and training and stuff. But in 2019, I hurt it quite seriously, and I haven't done jiu-jitsu since then. So I've been a black belt for basically 3 years, and a year and a half of those years, I haven't done jiu-jitsu. And I do feel, and I have no problem talking about it, but I do feel that I've forgotten a lot, you know?
Really?
And yeah, because I haven't forgotten fundamentals, and they're not completely gone either. It's in the same way you pick up. I was about to use a video game reference, but let's try to be a little bit more broad. In the same way you pick up an old book, Lydia, that you might have read when you know what I mean, and you start recognizing the old characters and this storyline or that storyline. Like, if you ask me something like that now, I might be like, I forget because I haven't been involved.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Obviously we've been locked down for so long and the gym's been closed, but here's me, I own a gym. So in normal times, you'd think I would be able to be down there and training a bit anyway, which I absolutely would be doing. But with the injury, it wasn't the case. So not only have I not been training, but I haven't been coaching or anything like that. And my focus was so 100%+ on me getting better and me trying to research and learn as many things as I could to help my situation with the back, that when I hurt my back first, I was like, it's going to be a few months this time before I can do jiu-jitsu. And then it was like, wow, it's going to be a long time before I can do jiu-jitsu. And then it became not even about jiu-jitsu. We were chatting before we started. It was like, I was actually worried about, like, again, not even sport or exercise. I was like, what sort of quality of life am I going to have if this is me at 30 and if this is the pain that I'm in? I had a bulging disc, which I'm sure many people have, so that's not a problem in itself, I don't understand, but I had a bulging disc L5-S1, which is one of the most common places for men especially to have a bulging disc. Basically the lowest down part of your spine. Your S is your sacrum and your L is your lumbar. So lowest down part of your spine. I had a disc bulge on the right side. That was, I probably got that in 2015 doing a stupid deadlift. And it's because I've always had, you know, stiffness and some pains here and there. But it gave me this sciatica, this leg pain, really, 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 really bad. And it just marched on and on and on. I couldn't walk. I couldn't sit down. And when I say I couldn't sit down, I didn't sit down. Like, didn't sit in a chair. I only stood or lay on my belly in like a cobra position because I could only extend my back. I couldn't bend over at all. I couldn't touch my toes to even, not. And I don't mean from straight. Like, I had problems like cutting my toenails. Here's me as like years previous, I'm Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor, I think I'm fit. People would have been coming to me asking me for fitness advice and training advice, and I had a lot of my, it's not ego is the wrong word, but my self-image was like that person, you know.
Absolutely.
And it didn't, again, because ego definitely isn't the word, because it didn't knock me in an ego sense when I lost all of that. But I lost all of that and I was like, well, what the fuck, what am I now?
Your,
like,
identity.
What do I know about? Like, I don't know. I've never put as much time into anything as I've put into jiu-jitsu. And that's not because I'm some sort of studious. I was like, oh, yes, jiu-jitsu. You know, I'm really going to delve deep into this. I just liked it.
I just
went with the flow. And more importantly, I had a good relationship with my coach, my friend, and our coach, Dara. And probably just the fact that we were doing something together for a time where it felt kind of like cool to be, we were kind of like outliers. Well, we're taking this kind of seriously at a stage where, and we didn't feel, it was just interesting. Like, it didn't make us feel cool, but it was just an interesting thing to be a part of. So probably that ride just kept me doing it, you know? But yeah, like, I thought.
I'm wondering, you know, when you say, you speak about like you as a person and having that sort of impulsivity and like, you know, being passionate about something and you know, going from 0 to 100, how was it, you know, what were the dark moments like, I suppose, in when your livelihood, your coaching ability, your ability to exercise, train, everything is taken from underneath you, and you have this, like, you're faced with, for me, the worst thing I can imagine is something happening to me and somebody saying, you'll never do XYZ again, that I love. And jiu-jitsu would be one of those things. But to have that, what you say, that fear of, will I even be able to stand up? Will I be able to walk?
Oh, Lydia, the crazy thing was, luckily not very many people said to me, here, you'll never do these things again. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, maybe that was just a network of people that, and I actually didn't meet even many doctors. I actually got lucky enough to have the surgery that I had in a private hospital for free, because it was the COVID. It was when the situation there in the Irish hospitals at the time was all the private hospitals were being used by the public system.
Right.
I'm so clued. I got the benefit of it. Basically, I got the surgery for free, right? Because I was in a private hospital as a public person, and I didn't have life insurance. I didn't have health insurance or anything like that. I had the money in the bank account, but that didn't mean I could afford it, you know?
Yeah, of course.
I was planning on paying for this, you know, and I ended up getting it for free.
Ding.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, as if, like, but it was gas, because I was like, yes. And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm absolutely fucked here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I was just back
there's
to
no win.
The pain again. But I didn't, I met a lot of, like, I wouldn't be someone to rush to until this now. This has completely changed my perspective, but I wouldn't be someone to rush to the doctors about something like that. I was always under the impression, and this shows me, this paints me in a bad light, so I don't mind saying it, but I thought that doctors didn't know about the body in that sense. Mm-hmm. Certainly the doctors that I had met, I thought that you need to go to a physio for that type of thing.
Yeah.
And if you're sick, medically, you go to the doctor, and then if you're sick physically, you go to this physio. Yeah. I saw so many different physios. I spent so much money. So many of them told me that it wasn't my back, that I didn't have a disc issue. So many of them gave me these exercises that now I wouldn't touch. Wow. All through, you know, good kindness. You know, they weren't robbing me or anything like that. But I always kind of thought at the start, I was like, yeah, this is going to get better. This is going to get better. And the dark moments were just when it just never did, and just kept not, like, you know, I would like, you'd wake up, I'd have half an hour where I'm like, wow, it actually feels pretty fucking good here, and then half an hour later, like,
and can you, now that you look back at that time, can you see any triggers for why it got bad, or times of day
now,
or
here's where we start getting weird, right? so I've had sore back for a long time, right? I've had sore lower back, again, the typical, if I'm sure the three of us here have had sore lower backs at some stage in your life. And that's the one that I had too. The one that's stiff, it feels a bit, fuck. And you see how the person's walking and you're like, yep, that's the one that I have as well. Okay. And then you do whatever it is, a trip to the physio. He absolutely, or she absolutely gets in there and fucking sorts you out with the elbow. I saw sometimes someone who put needles in me and then electrocuted the needles.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I talk about these things now as if they're crazy, but these helped me. Do you know, like, these things fixed me at a time. Mm-hmm. But got to the stage where it never did help me, right? But I had this ongoing injury. And then when it started to get quite serious was, and someone who I met, who I'm hopefully going to mention more than one time today, who you've had on before, was Mr. David Gray, who's legend. Literally saved me in this sense. But just before I had the surgery, like, this is 9-10 months of, and in the grand scheme of things, 9-10 months doesn't sound like too long of a time, but every single day of 11 out of 10 pain, like more pain than you can imagine, and not in my back, like in my leg. My whole leg was just indescribable. He says to me, any big stresses over the past 2 years? And I was like, no.
David says to me,
right, this is on our first meeting on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
Any big stress over the past? And I was like, no, not particularly, to be honest. I was like, I've just moved into a new house with some mates that I like, and we are enjoying our time together now. You know, I've run a business that at the time was, not that I'm Elon Musk, but like, it's supporting itself and I enjoy it.
This is East Coast Jiu-Jitsu Bray.
Yeah, your gym. Exactly. Yeah. I was teaching jiu-jitsu classes. I like it.
Yeah.
I have a very, very easy life. Like, mm-hmm. I get to do some sports and I get to go to the gym. And at the time, this is a year of me and my brother Adam were going to the gym, lifting pretty serious weights every day, and then going to Five Guys after for burgers every day for like a year. And like, this is a very happy lifestyle, you know, very, very envious lifestyle for lots of people. And I only was afforded that because I was absolutely slumming it for the past 10 years previous, mm-hmm. you know, teaching jiu-jitsu for free in many yeah. cases and stuff. But yeah, David says to me, and he stresses in the past, no, I have this pretty good lifestyle. And he goes, come on, have a think. And I was like, well, when my dad passed away, and then I was like, and a long-term relationship that I had with a girlfriend kind of broke up just out of nowhere. And then I was like, oh, and a couple of weeks ago, I had to get a colonoscopy because my dad had colon cancer and I got to 30 and they were like, okay, you need to have, I had no symptoms or mm-hmm. anything, but they were like, you need to get this. And 6 days after I had the colonoscopy, the leg pain started.
Wow.
And the stress of losing my dad, which I dealt with, I thought. Like, if you had asked me, I wasn't bottling it up. It was mm-hmm. something that I would be talking about with friends yeah. and family. I had a network of support around me. But what was crazy was a big part of that support was my girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And we then broke up and I felt, oh, shit, I've lost my dad. I've lost my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. That was helping me through this. I was like, now I just feel. And the times that it gets you, and I'm sure everyone's familiar with this, is when you go to bed.
Yeah.
And you're by yourself in bed and you're like, oh, no, like all mm-hmm. the bad things. And then yeah. I go to my fun life and I'm like, yeah, lifting weights, training, mm-hmm. beating people up, down jiu-jitsu, and then into bed, oh, the bad things again. But yeah, so all of these, as soon as I said them, I was like, oh, yeah. But all of these quite bad and invasive and stressful things happened to me. Yeah. And then. So yes, to answer that question.
How did you feel when you acknowledged these things?
I didn't believe that that was why I had a sore back. I was like, no. Like one of the other things asked me, which is why I've gone on this breathing venture with the Breathing Deadly thing, was he was talking to me about, well, how are you breathing? And I was like, oh, what have I paid money for here? Like, this is a Zoom session. This bloke going, how are you breathing? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, man, I'm in crippling pain here. I'm about to get a surgery. And this was right in the middle of the lockdown at the time. I got the surgery in May 2020. So for the months previous, we were in lockdown. I couldn't see a doctor. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see a physio. I felt so separated. I felt so lost. I felt like the system, all of the other patients that were seeing the doctor that I was seeing, and the surgeon that I had was fantastic. I think he did a great job. But mm-hmm. All of his other patients were like old men and women. And I'm asking him, I'm like, yeah, but am I going to be able to fucking beat someone up after this? Like, do you know what I mean? Am I going to be able to do it? And he's kind of like, oh, yeah, you're kind of. And let me tell you, I've done what I believe to be some of the most specific and well-informed rehab for mm-hmm. my situation that I could ever have imagined getting. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not good. And I'm nearly a year down the line. And I'm like, well, how would I have been if I didn't find this stuff?
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm in this pain and this guy's asking me how am I fucking breathing?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, long story short, the way the shapes that my body were taking to make a breath in and to push a breath out thousands and thousands and thousands of times a day literally challenged and changed my posture, the way that my body holds itself. I was breathing, like, not to say that I was at home going, because I was panicked, but because I had these stressful days, particularly in bed, you're breathing faster, you're breathing shallower, I'm breathing into my chest, my every exercise I would have done in the gym, Lydia, shoulders back and down, I'm bench pressing, I'm doing chin-ups in jiu-jitsu, I'm doing lots of shoulders back and stuff like this, and I'm just opening up the front of my body, tensing the back of my body. Frustrating thing is lots of the exercises that I would have done to try to fix my problem just did that too, tensed the back of my body and opened up the front of my body. The best way to explain it, as you can do it as you're listening, but if you have a hand on your chest and a hand on your stomach, and you just take as big of a breath in using your nose as you can, and just mm-hmm. push it out through your nose as well, and just see, for example, if your hand on your chest feels like it's moving lots, or if your hand on your belly feels like it's moving lots, that's just an indicator visually of and that doesn't mean that that's the breath that came in your nose, by the way. That goes to your lungs. But the shapes that your body make is just how you change the pressures within to facilitate drawing air into those lungs. And long story short, again, I was just breathing into my chest and my belly again and again and again with a tight back again and again. Mm-hmm. And when I would have first done that test with David, he would have said to me, hey, breathe in like that. And my shoulders would have went up to my ears. I would have taken a big, smelly, loud sniff. And I was like, was that good or was that bad?
So the idea is to be, to breathe in stillness.
No, the idea is that that's it, like a good way of explaining these things simply for me, I think, because I've had a cool experience trying to learn and then pass this knowledge on, because I'm a personal trainer. I'm a qualified personal trainer, and I've been a coach for many, many years, jiu-jitsu and stuff. But I'm not a physiotherapist, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not expert on anything really, except, and even not jiu-jitsu, but that's what I believe that I know the most about jiu-jitsu. I stumble across this world. So me trying to unpackage it or unpack it, whatever the word is, simply has helped me a lot. But it's not that you need to be still when you breathe, but it's that if when you take a breath in, or when I took a breath in, if the front of my body has to open up and the back of my body has to get tight every single time that I do that, well then that's just that displays a lack of variability, meaning that I don't really have many options elsewhere. I'm butchering all of this. Like this is as you can see, an area that I've spent the last year really seriously invested in, and I still struggle to, without demonstrating the exercises, I still struggle to. I meet someone, a good friend of mine, and they'd be like, "What's all this stuff that you've been doing?" And I'm like, oh, it's kind of like exercise where you... And this is even the experience that I had doing the stuff with David.
But it's like with jiu-jitsu, when you try to explain jiu-jitsu to someone.
Exactly.
Now, you're
it's so broad. It's so broad. Basically, what should happen when you do that breath in is that your chest can move, your belly can move, but not just your chest and your belly can move. If you go to the doctor now after this for a checkup, the doctor's going to put the stethoscope on your back to listen to your breath. And that's because most of the tissue of your lungs is in your back. I know they check the chest too, of course, but if you breathe in and nothing at the back fills up, in fact it gets smaller, well then that's just that's just a display of limitation there. Like, you could be trying to do all sorts of stretches to correct that, because that was the problem I had. That's the postural problem I had, was chest and belly sticking out to me, and my back was really, really tight. And the physios are acknowledging this, and the doctors are acknowledging this, and they're going, wow, your low back is so compressed. Do these stretches, do these like glute exercise with a band around your knees or something. And they never said, well, actually, why is it like that?
Yes.
And that was the buy-in when I did the stuff with David. He was talking about the breathing stuff first, and I was like, oh my God. I passed some of this stuff on to Keen Cowley, you know, Keen.
Yeah.
And he said to me something which I was laughing, and I think I agree with him from my experience. But he was like, typically when someone talks to you about breathing exercises, it's some lad that's had a bad acid trip or something like that, he said. Do you know? I would have been like, oh, some bloke talking about fucking breathing. He's also going to be talking about chakras and all of this stuff. And there could be, that's an area that I just had no experience in, and I considered it alternative. I was this meathead, like just training, lifting weights and da 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 da. And I just wouldn't have given him that area any time until I was like, well, and I was recommended David through, I had exhausted like a ladder of, okay, this person, okay, well, they sent me to this person, and then they sent me to this person, and eventually I made it up the ladder to David,
which is wild, because you know, you went through all these, kissed all these frogs before you kissed your prince.
I know it's crazy how much that I talk about. I mean, so the impact that him and his training and his programs and all have had on me, I haven't even met him. Like, this has all been online.
No way. Wow.
The whole thing's been through the lockdown. I've met him in the sense that we've done many Zoom one-on-ones, which is something that I wouldn't have thought was real either. Yeah. I would have been like, ah, you can't be learning stuff on Zoom, do you know?
Yeah. Well, he is incredible at what he does.
Yeah.
And you can tell from within like 30 seconds of meeting him that he is obsessed with it, and he's obsessed with the human body and how it functions and how it works and helping people. And he's so confident in his ability, you know. But what I found fascinating about, and it's touching on what you're saying about the breath as well, is that most of his you know, clients that would come in. Within, you know, a minute, he can see exactly that their issue is simply their breath from how they breathe. And he said that to me when he was in on I'm not sure what episode it is. It's one of the early doors episodes, probably in the first 10, I think, of this podcast. But he said afterwards, you know, just when you meet people, just take note of how they're breathing. And I'd done it for about 6 weeks afterwards, and it was absolutely fascinating. The worst one was my dad, because he smokes like a trooper. And even I notice when my dad sends me videos of like the dogs in his back garden, it's like,
you hear him, yeah.
It's all through the mouth, and it's all that, like, you know, now that you're aware of it, or that I'm aware of it, and I hear him breathing like that, I'm like, fuck, I'm getting like edgy, yeah, even hearing you breathe like that, yeah, you know?
But something that everyone knows, I'm glad, this is actually one thing I was planning on just coming on, having to list chat Lydia, right? So I wasn't like that. I was like, right, this is what I want to say. Yeah. But there is one thing that I did want to say, because I was imagining that we would start to talk about the breath or something in some shape because of the new stuff that I'm doing. There's like loads of things. There's like breath work in yoga. By the way, this is my experience. Mm-hmm. I'll happily debate it with somebody if they think otherwise. And I've had to debate some of these things with other people as well. Also, I'm young in this game, and I'm happy to learn more and stuff. But there's lots of people know loads about breath now because there's this bloke Wim Hof going around, and then there's people doing yoga is very popular. And I think personally that that has done as much damage for to me. Let's say that everyone was like me. I think that that's what training your breath is. And I'm like, oh yeah, I will. Oh, breath work, Chris, you're doing the breathing deadly. Oh, yeah, so am I. I'm doing Wim Hof. And I'm like, oh, it couldn't be more different. Like, all of these different practices might talk about the length of the breath. They might talk about the pace of the breath. They might talk about doing your nose versus your mouth. They might talk about the fitness benefits of it, the mindfulness, the meditative benefits of it. But I never experienced one that went, here, when you breathe, you shouldn't be putting it into your belly, and into your ribs shouldn't be sticking out like that and all. It's the shapes that your body has to make. I'm curling my bicep here as I'm talking to you. And imagine I had to do that 15,000 times a day, every single day. That's something to take account of. Like, you looking at me, it's quite hard to ignore that I'm just moving my arm loads, right? But every time you breathe in, you're moving in a way, and it's very likely that that way isn't the ideal way to do things. As we know, think about 10 of your friends, right? And likely all 10 of them can't, for example, touch their toes. Likely they can't. Maybe some of them can't. Maybe they can't do 10 chin-ups. Maybe they can't do a handstand. So it's common that people can't do things that we could say that they're supposed to be able to do. And I've done some one-on-one work through teaching. It's funny, earlier on in the thing, I'm like, yeah, I don't really know much about this. And now I'm like, and I'm, by the way, I'm accepting online clients. But I've done a number of, I know a little bit enough to be able to help a lot of people.
To get people onto their journey.
The funny thing is how little that you need to actually know to be able to impact as much. The little bit of knowledge that I know now has helped people in similar situations to me that have seen and paid thousands and thousands and thousands of euros or dollars for people who have studied for years and years. And I'm not discounting the study in college, but I'm saying that's baffling. I have basically discovered, Lydia, that not only was this breathing stuff the fix for my issue, but it was the cause. And I really believe that. And I believe that in a, like, not in a airy-fairy way, as in, oh, I was in a bad place mentally and that manifested as pain. No, literally the way that I was moving my body to breathe made my body look a certain way. And that way that my body looked made me have a sore back. And that way that my body had to go chest up and belly out, that's just tight back. And that's where my bulge was. And knowing that is actually quite simple. It was simple to me because I was involved in it on such a personal level. Like, I had to fix this project in my body or else I was lost, you know. So I really, really, really had to trust it and go for it. And then when it started to work, not only is the first thing that's ever worked, and it's the first thing that's ever said, this is why. Because I've been, if you know, your dad, my dad, my uncle, someone that's in their 50s, 60s, 70s, if they have a problem in the back, you'd be like, yeah, okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. But I'm doing all the things that they tell you you're supposed to do. I'm a personal trainer. I'm fit. I'm eating, apart from the burgers, I'm eating well. I'm thought I was sleeping good. I'm like, I was in jiu-jitsu. We know lots of very flexible people. Mm. So in jiu-jitsu, I would always be like, oh, well, Chris isn't flexible, right? Mm. But think about our 10 friends that don't do jiu-jitsu again. I'm probably much more flexible than them.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
So you can forget sometimes. And we know so many people that can put a leg behind their neck.
Yeah.
So then we kind of think, oh, Jesus, I'm so stiff. Do you know? Yes, but I wasn't. Yes. Like, I was sporty. I could have went and played a game of football. I was skateboarding. I can dive off into the swimming pool. I was doing cartwheels and warm-ups and all sorts of stuff. And then, bam, it's gone. So previously, people had told me, oh, your glutes aren't strong enough. That's why your back is like that. Your hip flexors are doing this. That's why your back is like that. And I do the exercises that they gave me, and it never worked, which tells me that that wasn't the fix and that wasn't the cause.
Yeah.
And then I do this and it works, not only really quickly, but I don't know if you've seen the pictures or anything that I shared on my Instagram.
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah.
What is that?
Like, incredible. Yeah.
That makes, that's the most real. If I had have saw something like that, and I'm talking about, in case you have, you can go at Breathing Deadly on Instagram. You check me out. The name, by the way, came to me before the business. I have another business that I'd love to start. It's just coming up with business names because I've got so many more of those
brilliant.
In the tank. But then about that as well is, I think I've kind of, I've been a personal trainer and a coach for many, many years longer than I've been doing just this breathing stuff. Mm. So I kind of think I might have penciled myself into a, I might affect it there a little bit because people think that that's all that I'm doing now is just some little breathing exercise. Whereas obviously there's, to any training program, there's, you know.
But I mean, the fact that you, you've experienced that, you have firsthand experience on what has happened to you, that gives you more, a lot more credibility, shall we say, than someone who hasn't. So someone that's just sat with a book in front of them and learned how to do something. You have now got a key detail, which is having compassion for your client or the person who comes to you because you have an understanding of exactly what they're going through.
Which is an area that I actually reached out to. There was, like, I had almost spent more time learning about my situation off people on YouTube. Like, there's many people, English speaking, obviously are the ones that I'm going for, but in America and the UK that have had similar operations and have documented there. So I really didn't know. I was like, wow, I have to have a fucking low back surgery. Mm. And I'm looking on YouTube to find out how I'm going to be in 3 months and how I'm going to be in 6 months. Yeah. And these people, some people are like, wow, I feel good. And what I know now is they might not have been as bad as me. Like, so there's some people that are like 3 months. Some people, I'm not going to get into names and stuff, but there's different, and they're not even Irish, so it's not like someone that we know personally, but there's people that are believed to be in the world of back pain. These are like the experts in the field and stuff. And I was in contact with some of these people, some paid and some unpaid. Mm-hmm. And they told me, one of them, who was like a Australian guy, lead big expert in back pain, and that's his whole job, is talking about fixing back pain. He was like, you get the microdiscectomy, which is the surgery that I got. And he said, you'll be back on the mat in 6 weeks. And I was like, holy fuck, 6 weeks, yes. So I was like, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
And it has been nearly a year and I'm not back on the mats, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm doing good. Mm-hmm. And it's been a year and I'm doing good. Because, like, it's crazy.
Because you're dedicated to it. You're dedicated to your recovery.
Well, I have to be because I'm 32 and I have to run. I had to run from that. Like, I couldn't. It's not. I didn't have little sore back. I got a back surgery. Like, I have bits of my body. I have my left elbow. I don't know if you remember Vlad.
Yes, I do. I love Vlad.
There's a guy. There's a guy that trained jiu-jitsu with us. Exactly. I don't know where he is now. But
I think he went back home, didn't he?
Yeah. Where was he? I'm going to do him a disservice.
I know,
now.
Yeah. I'm going to say Croatia, but I don't
think it is. No, he wasn't Croatia. I'd love to say Latvia or something, but I might be doing him.
Eastern European.
Yes. Oh, sorry, Vlad.
sorry, Vlad.
Well, actually, not sorry, because wait till you hear this, right? So, like, I was a blue belt at the time. So this must have been in 2012. I was rolling with him and I had a submission on him at Kimura. And he just did a big mad flip out. And I basically, my left arm just went like, snapped. It made this crazy noise. And I was like, oh my God. And this is what I'm talking about. I was slumming at jiu-jitsu. I didn't even have money to go to the physio. Mm. So I just ignored it. I just kept training. And 10 years later now, like, I have problems with this arm. You might hear it. It's probably picked it up on the mic a few times today. It goes like, tsh, it snaps when I straighten it out sometimes. So I'm not someone to like rush to get someone to fix me, you know?
Mm-hmm. But here's something that, sorry, go
ahead. No, please, go ahead.
What I wanted to touch on is, and I don't know if there's even the right answer for it, but touching on the minefield of suggestion when it comes to recovery, when it comes to training, nutrition, like literally in all aspects, there is an opinion everywhere. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. You should be eating this. You don't eat this, you know, move this way. Don't move that way. It's, you can find like,
it's dangerous.
It's dangerous for every article, for every book, for every YouTube video that you find for someone saying, yes, this is the answer. There is 10 more saying, absolutely do not do this.
Yeah.
So how do you find your way when you were in the situation? Like, is it just a matter of trial and error, not giving up?
I did things that made me worse because I thought they were going to help me. And I spent money on things that were making me worse.
Yeah.
If I wasn't so active before all of this happened, I wouldn't have had something to chase to get back to it. So I don't know if I would have had the same dedication.
Yeah.
And I've got, like, my whole livelihood is built around me. My dad always warned me about that. He said, what if you break your legs, when I was teaching jiu-jitsu and I was trying to... Now, he was encouraging. He was trying to... He wasn't like, stop doing this, but he was just like, what if you break your leg and you can't teach jiu-jitsu again? And I was always like, oh, you shut up, Thomas.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't break my leg, so... I broke my back. But, like, I just felt like I had to. I just felt like I had to do it. And like I said earlier, that's me. And I was like, I had to go back to being me. I just like it. That's what my last year has, it's like, I, outside of the personal training sessions that I do online, like, I just have nothing to fucking do. Like, I don't really have any hobbies that aren't training. And my whole life has been that. And I'll even, you know, I'll flick up the PlayStation on, which I enjoy, and I'll be half an hour into it, and I'll be like, oh, fuck this, like, do you know what I mean? And I just, it's just, it's mad. Like, it's crazy. The motivation, I don't know where I got it from. I must have been, people always said to me, wow, you're doing, how did you manage to keep the head up? And I was just like, I don't know. Well, actually, when my dad passed away, he had quite a late diagnosis of his cancer, and he kind of was like in a bad, as in, okay, it's not good news. The first news he got wasn't good news. I was kind of like, oh. And then how I saw him deal with that, I didn't consciously make a decision to go, right, well, he's after doing that, so I have to try to do this as well. But I was like, I don't have a fucking sore back. Like, he's watched, and myself and, you know, Adam, we've a younger brother again. And I was like, wow, even for my dad, however sore and however sad all of those things were for me and for Adam and for Glenn and for the rest of our family, how sad must that have been for my dad to see, because he had plenty of time to see all of that. We said we weren't going to cry at the start.
I can't believe you're actually doing something now. Go on.
But I was like, how, when you hear about someone like that that's close to you, you're like, oh my God, they have cancer. And then you're thinking, like, we get the news and we're like, oh, and you have such a bad day then because of it and such a bad week. What about them?
Yes.
How must they feel, right? So I basically see my dad handling it the way that he handled it. And I was like, well, fuck, like, I can't. And again, I don't really think I made the conscious decision to do that. I probably looked back on myself a few months in and went, oh, maybe that's what's going on here. But I just couldn't have. If I stopped, I don't know, I'd be in a wheelchair or something. Like, it was bad, like, bad, bad stuff. I had to keep running.
I was about to ask, how did you react in that situation? Like, it's fair to say that is kind of everyone's worst nightmare, is that someone you love gets that news. And
I actually remember, so there's a place that my dad used to love going, and I go there semi-regularly now still. It's really nice. But Avoca Hand Weavers in Kilmac, do you know the place?
Yes. Yeah.
And my mom's house is quite near there, and my parents separated a long time ago, and my dad lived in Marino. And if he was ever coming out to meet us, he'd often pick us up at the house and we'd go and get lunch and we'd sit in Avoca or whatever, which happened one day. And then he gives us this news there on the day. And he told us he had bad, he was like, lads, I've got bad news. And I was like, oh, fuck, what's happened to, you know, his mom, her nana, yeah. or what's happened to da 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 da. And when he told us, I was kind of expecting like, boom, boom. Like, he was never sick or anything yeah. like that, you know. Like, he wasn't a fucking Iron Man out, but he was never sick or yeah. anything like that. And yeah, don't really know. Like, it's sad, but I couldn't have been more sad than him, do you know? Yeah. Like, not that I wouldn't have allowed myself to be more sad than him, but I wasn't going to. Like, best believe there was nights where I was fucking crying. Mm. I'll tell you, the hardest day was the funeral.
Mm.
And having to, I remember having to, he worked in a life insurance company and he'd worked there for a long time and he was reasonably high up in it to the point where he'd be giving lots of presentations and meetings across, you know, the country and stuff. And him and lots of his close friends were from there as well. And one of his friends, Dermot, said to me, because I had to make a little speech at, yeah. at the funeral, said to me, you have to practice that loads of times out loud. Because I was like, I'm speaking in jiu-jitsu class all the time and stuff. So you have to practice that loads of times out loud. And me reading it to my mom, I was like bawling, crying, reading it to my mom. Do you know what I mean? I was like, how am I going to fucking do this on the day? So I don't know. It was just, it's just surreal. Surreal. Yeah. Like, it feels, it's mad. It's mad.
How are you now?
Good, like fine. It feels, again, I feel, some days it hits you and you're like, whoa. Like, my parents separated for many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. So outside of a phone call, I saw my dad regularly, but he wouldn't have been, do you know, sometimes, and luckily I've never had this situation, but I've seen it in like movies and stuff. It's even portrayed this way sometimes, that when someone in your house passes away, that like their picture goes away from the one on the wall and like their seat on the chair goes yeah. away. It feels like there's something missing in yeah. your life. Weirdly for me, it was less like that physically because I didn't live with him anyway, do you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have seen him as regularly anyway, but the whole vibe of Jesus, I would have got so much advice off him. I would have got so much help off him, so much financial help off him at the worst time. So much like, oh, really, really, I've fucked up. I've made this really bad mistake. Well, I'm going to chat to my dad about it or something like that. And yeah, just that being gone or not being able to say to them, guess what? Like if you've had good news with the business or if you've had, you know, but yeah, like good. Some days, it's not like some days are hard because it's not like, and that's not because I don't care, but, and this is why I would have thought that the stress didn't hurt my back because I was like, I'm chilling.
You're okay.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm fine. Like I'm dealing with it. I talk about him a lot as well. That's one thing that I've noticed. And I've kind of been trying to consciously show people that it's all right to do this. Mm-hmm. But I've been around people and I'll be like, oh, yeah, my dad used to do it. And they'll be kind of like, oh, they'll be kind of awkward about me talking about it. Yeah. And I'm like, what's so awkward about that? Why don't you? Mm-hmm. Oh, where did you hear about that band? My dad told me about them. Or, oh, I used to say about Avoca. Mm-hmm. This is where I used to come with my dad. Yeah. My dad used to support that team. Oh, I remember my dad used to always say this. And I've seen eyes from people kind of going to the floor and they don't know what to say. What do
you think that is? Is it the uncomfortableness of like that you might be upset or that you might get upset over it or they don't know what to say?
Everybody pushes those things under the carpet. Like,
so
it's like
strange.
Same thing I had. My last ever game of professional football, right? professional schoolboy level football. I twisted my balls.
Quite the career, Chris.
Now, I twisted my balls, Lydia, right? So,
actually,
yes. Now, this will make you cry. This will make... She's laughing at you. You're not allowed to laugh, right?
Your actual balls.
This is a medical thing. It's not like I just twisted them with my hands. That's like, it's like a thing. You've twisted your testicles, right? So,
right.
Now, we're very medical today.
I'm sorry.
Basically, like, it's, you know, you can't see it from the outside. It doesn't look like it's your shoelaces are tied, you know. But inside, something has twisted, right? And it's very, very painful. Very, very painful.
I bet.
And I was playing a football match and I kind of started to slow down. And I was like, oh, did I get like a flick of the, you know what I mean? Did something happen to me that I didn't notice? And basically, it progressed and it got worse and worse. And I had to go to the hospital. I can't even remember why I'm telling this story now because you're just laughing so much. What are we talking about? Now I'm talking about my balls all of a sudden. Why did we start talking about this?
I think you were talking about your dad's memory and I don't know. don't know how we've gotten on to twisted balls. You were telling it because, oh, the link between a death of a family member, the awkwardness of strangers.
Yes, and thank now God you remembered that. I was like, how am I talking about a pair of balls? Right, so I've had a number of problems later down the years from right. that. I never got... luckily, it sorted itself. I had to go to hospital.
Sorry, Chris, I don't mean to be laughing at
this is very...
I just have this visual of actual...
This is a very serious problem. This is a very serious problem.
Sorry.
I might joke to make you feel bad. But yeah, the shoelaces right. now as well. Mine would be thick shoelaces too. It would be like a pair of boots. So if that happens to you once, right,
yeah.
you're basically at more risk of it happening to you
right,
again.
Right,
so
right.
I've had down the over the years a few reasons to go into the mechanics, shall we say,
yeah.
and let the mechanic check the undercarriage, shall we say, right?
Yes.
And that's something.
Sorry,
that
there's no laugh there. That's actually fair play.
I've let yeah. many a doctor feel my ball,
yeah.
and I've let a couple of doctors even put a finger up the bum. Do you know yeah. what I mean? And that's the same thing. You get the same eyes when you talk about that stuff. And it's like, yeah. what? It's like, it's the same as... It's just because it's like your willy or your... Do you know what I mean? Or your boob. All of a sudden, everyone's like, oh my God.
It's true.
What? It's the same as... It's not my fault that
absolutely,
that happens,
like. Absolutely. We need to, but I still don't... Oh, yes. Yeah, so the link there is that it's the same awkwardness.
Right. If it was them, they're like, well, Jesus, I wouldn't be talking about that.
Yeah.
Because
you know?
they're not comfortable with it. And then when it almost throws them off. This isn't everyone, by the way. Mm-hmm. And funny, like, when I noticed it first was, weirdly enough, around the time that my dad passed away, two of my other close friends, their dads too. Wait a minute. they had same illness, same time,
wow.
same age, same diagnosis, same stage, everything. Never met each other, you know, but
wow.
it's all around the same time and kind of dealing with that or chatting about that together. Mm. And me talking to them and them talking to me about it, I was like, oh, this is actually kind of fucking nice. And then yeah. when you talked to someone who hasn't had that mm-hmm. loss or something, mm-hmm. they're the ones that are kind of like, oh, I don't know. And I don't know if it also makes them feel, oh, well, Jesus, I better go talk to my parents now and I better, mm-hmm. do you know what I mean? Because that's something that you hear regularly with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you see a post online or an article about someone whose parents have passed away, they say, well, make sure to call your mother yeah. tonight now or something like yeah. that, you know. But
and it is valid, but I find I'm loving that we're actually discussing this because my best friend just lost her dad a couple of days ago. Well, we had the funeral a couple of days ago and he had a long battle with Alzheimer's.
Mm.
And since we kind of knew that he was at that stage, I have had an irrational fear of my dad dying. I don't know why, you know, I don't have it with my mom, but for some reason it is my dad. And, you know, I'm like this panic state of like, oh God, like maybe I should this and maybe I should that and what will happen here? And just my mind running away with itself and I have to kind of go, okay, Lydia, calm down. Let's
see. I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I know. You'd
he's, be he's like, what? Do you?
But it's one of those things where I'm like, you know, when you do see something like that online and, you ring your parents, ring this person, tell them you love them. I mean, yes, it's a nice concept and you should ring them at that moment and say you love them, but I feel that you can't live your life in that sort of state of like fear, I suppose, that like bad things are going to happen because it's inevitable, you know.
Yeah,
we're all going to have to go through bad situations in life.
Yeah.
But there is also, you know.
That's grand after. That's the other thing as well. That's so even like for me and my two brothers, I'm sure we're all. It's a heavy thing to have, like losing your parent at any time. And then the age, like I'm the oldest mm-hmm. and then they're both younger than me and younger again, you know? So for them, in a way, it's maybe going to get them more because it's like I had them for longer mm-hmm. type of thing,
yeah.
you know? So I would feel for them in that sense. But like, we're still fine. We're still living our lives. We're yeah. still making new connections. We're still plowing mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. Glenn is in secondary school. Adam's, you know, meeting new people. So am I. We're yeah. training. We're, you know, life goes on. And I think that's important for like, who the hell am I to be Dr. Phil or something here? But like, that's important to know.
Yeah.
That is like on the, and that's important for everything, is to like, you have to have done it to know. Mm. Like, you have to have, same as the self-defense stuff, same as me talking about my girlfriend's teaching. It's, you have to have, everything makes you so nervous until you've done it. And then you you have to make the decision then. I always had that with competing in jiu-jitsu. Our coach, Dara, would have talked a lot about, you have to think and tell yourself that you're good, and you have to tell positive visualization, and you have, that never worked for me. I was too cynical. I was always like, yeah, would you fucking stop, tell yourself you're good, will you cop on? And then you go in and you're right, and he's just going to beat me up. I was like, I can't tell myself that I'm better than you and get better than you. And now I know it's not all just telling yourself. But for me, success or confidence always came after I did it. Like, if I thought that I was going to win a jiu-jitsu tournament, it had been because I've already beaten up all these 10 lads, for example. Yeah. And if I want to be confident to teach a jiu-jitsu class, it's because I've already taught 50 of them. Or if I want to say, hey, look, if you make that, if you have that loss in your life or whatever, it does get better. Like, you know, and that's even with the breaking down of the relationship as well.
Yeah.
Weirdly, that almost hit me harder, because the loss of the, that was almost more unexpected. Mm-hmm. And that was like, wow, you're doing me now. Like, you're doing me dirty like this now.
Yeah.
And not that that, and that's not her fault. You know, like, you have
but
to look after
yourself. But it's
your truth,
how you feel in that
That's
time.
How I felt, exactly. Yes. I was oh, fuck. Like, you're literally, and maybe this is part of the whole thing. Jeez, I'm just Dr. Field myself. But I was like, you're literally my crutch here. You're a big part of the crutch in this. And I'm sure that's a heavy thing for, imagine you going out with someone. And now we were reasonably long-termed, you know, but all of a sudden you're dealing with that. And all of a sudden you're in that world, you know.
Yeah.
So, geez, I may have just solved the mystery there.
Well,
I have a few text messages to send, Lydia.
I feel like I should write you a check for this knowledge you've just bestowed upon us.
I don't know if it's knowledge. I don't know if it's knowledge.
But, you know, we're coming close to the end of our, oh my God, I sound like such a...
Very
like David Attenborough or something. We're coming close to the end. But I want, like, I'm wondering if you could give a synopsis maybe of all these experiences, you know, the jiu-jitsu journey, the jiu-jitsu black belts, the back injury, the finding the breath, you know, all these experiences, losing your dad, breakdown of relationships, all this. What is the lesson? If you could squeeze it all and juice it all.
Yeah.
What is the lesson here?
You have to be selfish. You have to be, and selfish doesn't mean bad.
Mm.
Do you know the way they tell you on the airplane to put your own mask on first before...
I was only thinking the other day, yes.
You have to do that.
Yes.
And I'm not someone who... I've been very close to people like Dara and like our other friends from East Coast and Fionn now more recently. I've been very close to people who are very, very successful in their fields. And I was never... I was always just like, I like doing this, you know? But I saw... Well, to do that, you have to even... I considered myself selfish just to be doing what I was doing. Mm. And I was like, well, they have another level of drive and da-da-da-da-da to achieve that. So that speaks for itself in like a competitive sense, that you have to be like, again, selfish just to make it easy to say, but it's not the usual connotations of the word selfish. But you have to look after yourself. You have to make stuff about you as well. That's something that I would always try to tell my students. If I was in a class... And this wouldn't have been me in school, but this is me now. If I was in a class and I wanted to know something, I'm figuring it out. I'm not embarrassed to ask a question.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed to have the whole thing be about me. If they want to volunteer, I'll do it, because I'm going to figure something out extra more because of this. So I would like getting involved and yourself with something and being selfish with, because that's how I made the connections. That's how I got good at jiu-jitsu, was because I just fucking hovered around Dara for like, what are those, do you know, like the whale, and then there's like the little fish that swims behind the whale. That was literally just me. Dara was doing so much study, so much, like, he had all these different online courses. He was traveling all around the world. I was just going to training and I was like, what was that thing? Oh yeah, I'll practice that. And I didn't do any of that. And I was just sucking it all up from him. And now more recently, through meeting David, they're like my sports dads, Dara and David, the two Ds. And they've never met then either. You know, it's mad, the fucking whole online thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, same thing. Like, just, I've just been blessed to meet really, really lucky people, but then why I've been able, I've been blessed to meet really, really smart people, but why I've been lucky enough to get something out of it is because I go, I'm pushing everyone out of the way and I'm like, this is about me, do you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not embarrassed to make it about me, and I'm not embarrassed to constantly be pestering someone for more information and more knowledge, do you know? And you have to learn about something. You can't just... You have to, like, you have, if something's important to you, you need to, you need to either learn about it yourself or find the person that already knows as much about it as you can, you know?
Well, that's what's the guy who wrote How to Think and Grow Rich?
That must be your chatting to Shane there, right?
I actually know the answer to that is
I have it here in my audiobook.
Oh, I don't know the answer to it anymore. Dara loves that book.
But yeah, I'm after listening to
literally the 90... only books that I've read are Harry Potter, and that's not even a joke. And that's actually true. And
Dale Carnegie.
It's Napoleon Hill.
Sorry, you're right. Napoleon Hill wrote Think and Grow Rich. But my audiobook that I'm listening to is How to Win Friends and Influence People, and it's by Dale Carnegie. They're kind of similar in their approaches, but not quite.
If it's not Stephen Fry, you're right. I'm not listening.
It's what a dude. He always says, always be the least smart of the five people in the room.
Yeah.
So the concept is that you're...
Nah, that's not
good. And here I am, one of three.
Nah, you want to be the second least smart.
Well, you know what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Going into the room. Sorry, could we just line up? I'd like to know where I sit here.
Well, I would even just conversationally disagree with that, because from a jiu-jitsu perspective, I've always said it's best to be... If you're a student, you need people that can beat you up, and you need people that you can beat up.
Yes, and
from a debating perspective, if you were in a room with five people and you are all hashing stuff out like you're talking, you want to be the least smart. If you're the least smart in the room, you will just take everything. Yeah. You'll be like, well, that must be fucking true. Okay, I'm just going to do that. You have to be able to level up and... Third smartest.
Okay, middle of the road. I'm gonna
text your man now.
Well, I think he's like well dead. Yeah, this was written in like the 30s or something. Yeah. From beyond the grave. Yeah. Dale Carnegie. Chris, thank you so much for coming in.
No worries, Lydia. It was lovely to get out and about into the real world again.
Absolutely. Good to see you. I saw you so much for 6 years of my life, and then that was it.
I know,
disappeared.
You'll get me back.
Good stuff. Where can people find out more about Breathing Deadly?
You check me out on Instagram, you check me out at Breathing Deadly, or if you want to know more about this, you want to check out David Gray, check out at David Gray Rehab. It's Gray with an EY, because you might end up at the, what's that, I don't even know the song. It's a banger though, it's a banger. So actually, either way, check them both out.
Yeah.
Check out both David Grays after this. But honestly, check him out, don't mind me. You'll find me later on.
check out both. But Chris, thank you so much for coming. That was a great chat.
I know, yeah, I enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. So looking forward to hearing how you get on. You may have to come back again.
Well, there you go.
And we track your progression.
Yeah, give me another, episode 160, whatever.
Chris hit the drink.
Yeah, big time.
Thank you so much. Chris Leddy for the First Exchange Podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.